Okay. We're live. Now, I want to express appreciation to you volunteers for the first time in a long time, maybe ever. We have Voices of Faith here at the low times, as we're organizing the volunteers to make sure that every 24 hours a day is covered. And I want you to be patient. I want you to go in the chapel and pray that God will wake people up. But for more than 20 years, people have called here during the odd hours for California. But every hour is prime time somewhere in the world, and we cover the world. And they've called here, and the phone rings, and there's been no one pick it up. And it's pretty hard to change frames of reference when people, particularly our regulars, say, well, I know if I wait until such and such a time, there's a chance people will be there, so they don't call during the day. And it's going to take me a while to change the habits of the viewing audience, that you have a responsibility of faith to make a connection. When you're watching, don't care what time of day it is, and you receive teaching that helps you. If you have character, you're going to get on the phone, my nickel, and express appreciation. It's a 24-hour... Our Voice of Faith are not prayer partners. They don't pray for you. But I can assure you that the messages get to me. My wife is sorting them. But again, we have staff problems. They're not cured by any means. Only thing I can say to you, the old-timers that know that more than 8 years ago, I began to suggest that my people read Windswept House. That indictment novel, supposedly, but it was more of a documentary of the problems facing the Catholic Church. And the ill-disguised Pope in this so-called novel, this ill-disguised Polish Pope, didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out who he was profiling. Didn't take a genius to figure out who the cardinal of Century City was, which said cardinal in reality doesn't exist. The Pope knew what was going on, and it's hitting the news now. The Portland diocese went into bankruptcy, facing $50 million in damage suits for the child molesting charges, and not just charges, acts. Pope knew what was going on, but he faced a terrible choice. He could excommunicate all the culprits and cripple the church overnight. In his case, and in the Catholic frame, and in the novel, again, ill disguised for the current Pope, who's heavy in Mariology, the Pope felt that Mary would solve it. And he's taken a trip finally toward the end to his old favorite monastery in Central Europe that was dedicated to Mary. And that's all these criminals were waiting for, so they could achieve their purpose, which was to reduce the Pope down to Vicar of Rome and not Vicar of Christ. I bled openly to the congregation. Corruption had entered in. We were so big, I couldn't do everything. And staff members were locked into positions where knowledge is power. I couldn't change them. They wouldn't change themselves. And I faced the agony daily. I can do what I did when I came here 30 years ago. Fire everybody. Cripple the church. Shut down the broadcast ministry. Start over. That was my agony for years, as each day I would pray, there will come a solution. I didn't know it at the time, but the solution was my wife. I can sit here and say now, as long as I have her and this church has her, and that's for eternity, I can fire everybody and don't have to shut the church down. There's very little that she hasn't pried into and knows. I didn't know. I couldn't spend the time doing the teaching and preaching and the legal work and all the things that only I can do and look into every nook and cranny and find what was going on. She does. If she ain't got to you yet, she will. And like me, she'll give her life for it. So now I don't have to shut the church down. But there's a couple of little pockets that I still have to deal with, but I can. There's a couple of little areas that I can shut that part down. The church will survive. Well, by the same token, the congregation has developed habits, and it's hard to change the habits. No matter what I say, they still expect to call, and there not be enough voices of faith here for it to matter. So we've got this chicken and the egg thing, which is first the chicken or the egg. Well, whichever it is in the chicken and the egg assembly, you volunteers are first. You come here, you act like that famous person that I said for 15 years stood at a phone booth out at what used to be the airport of Glendale. So he was there in case Howard Hughes flew in. Drive out every morning, stand by the phone booth. 15 years, Howard Hughes never flew in. Like the parable of the virgins, keep oil in the lamp. You have made a commitment. And I do want to say this. You know, it's germane to some of the faithful voices of faith that are almost as old as me, but have older traits than me. When the phone's not ringing, they like to talk. You talk on the sidewalk. You socialize outside. You're here for business. If the phone's not ringing, bow your head and start praying, they'll start ringing. Don't start. Well, it's already started, so I'm telling you. Don't make me put a stop to the unnecessary socializing in here. It's the same as the cathedral. Either you're socializing on the street, you come to the cathedral, you're there for business. Don't make me come here and chew somebody out for turning it into your own little tea party. This is work. And I have to count on the volunteers coming and saying, I'll be here praying until I pray calls out of this phone. Until the people out there begin to realize, yeah, there is a change. There is a core of faithful people here, 24 hours a day, ready to receive their calls. You understand me?
Yes, sir.
Some of you, and I appreciate the spirit, but listen closely. Some of you that got handed out the pulpits Sunday, the new resurrection pulpit that was not supposed to be handed out, have been sending them back. Stop it. I don't care that you have them. I care that the privilege was taken from me to give them to you by someone who presumptuously handed them out without authority. They weren't printed for you, by the way, and they had a $5 charge on them. And you could have picked them up in the bookstore. But I probably would have given them out. But I already said what I would have done. I would have said, I'm going to give one to every person who comes to the cathedral at a given Sunday. If you give me the promise that after you read it, you will find somebody intelligent enough to appreciate it and give it to them as a proper representation of the cathedral and what they can receive if they come there. Anybody should be proud to hand that out to anybody. So don't send it back to me. After you read it and enjoy it, find somebody intelligent enough to appreciate it and give it to them. I'm not having a fit because you got a $5 magazine for free. I had a fit because somebody dared to hand it out without my permission and without my knowledge. I'm old-fashioned that way. If I get married, I want to take the hymen of my bride, not you. Think that'll make you remember it? Now, the first time I got Doctor One, I had a security guard at the time. He went out to the airport, allegedly, to shake the plane down to make sure that it was security-free, while he took a free ride with the pilot up to Fresno and back. He had big muscles. He got his eardrums opened to match the size of his biceps. I use the same illustration on him. He took the hymen of my plane, and I didn't like it. That was my privilege, or my privilege to tell you, or if you wanted to check out the security, come and convince me that you need to do it. I'm old-fashioned. I refuse to change because we have an idiot, ill-mannered, computer nerd generation. Me first. Have about as much class as a dunghill. Everybody under 40 has got to convince me. I now know. The exception to the rule is somebody that has intelligence, ability to listen, a set of values, and class. They're all a bunch of ignoramus hicks with money as their God and himself as the center of the universe. The product of John Dewey's education that I prophesied before I ever came here and started prophesying here 30 years ago has brought the harvest of this disastrous generation. The only thing that's good about the war in Iraq is there's a few guys going to come back. Never should have been over there, but they've learned some discipline. War games doesn't create it as much as a reality. Gnosis. Now, I'm in a real good mood, in spite of what it sounds like. Wasn't too happy that no calls were coming in when I had plenty of voices of faith here. So you better change that real fast. And I like these 7 o'clock hours. This is just our people, just our network, not a bunch of channel surfers and bleedovers from the Christian Criminal Society. Don't want to transplant saints. I have no interest in competing with the religious circus land. I have no interest in competing with the religious gambling houses. Plant seed and reap a harvest of money. Give to God to get rich. That's nothing but criminal manipulation of poor simple people's faith in God. And it's long been known that when disasters come and depression is on the scene and people are out of money, that's when there's more of them will run to the gambling houses. I want people that love God for who he is, recognize he bought them with his own blood, And they want to learn how to serve him his way. No anybody else. You mean everybody can't come to your church? Right. 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 Don't want you. You don't mean business? Don't want you. You serious? As in a heart attack. Now, I'm serious. You better get on the phone. Get on the phone. Show me you're there, and then I'm going to do some teaching. This is sort of house-to-house talking. This is Pastor being Pastor with his people on television. I told you, I get the messages now. I didn't always. I got buried. I mean, how can I go through all the messages that are coming in? I pay people to do that. My wife, she then supervises it. I pay her with kisses. So you get off cheap. Now, that reminds me, in the half hour before I came here, I was listening to my recounting of the debt I owed my granddad. And I listened, I said, I can't believe I said that. I can't believe I said that because I said, he used to make me paddle the kiss that he used to use on me. Now, everybody knows what I meant. He used to make me kiss the paddle that he used to use on me. But I said he made me paddle the kiss that he used to use on me. And I'm still trying to figure out how he could do that. So, kiss triggered that memory. I was going to make that correction. I mean, it's going to stay forever on the tape till Jesus comes every time they play that. And there must be other people that try to figure out how my granddad made me paddle the kiss that he used to use on me. And that may make you listen to that next time. Which is good, because the rest of what I say you ought to hear at least once a week. But this is pastor's time. We fired a woman. I fired her. My wife wanted to and asked me. She'd been a problem. She's a New Englander. The only people in the world that are worse than the Israelites that God dealt with are New Englanders. Stubborn, intractable, hard-headed. But I usually get along with them because I give them what they're used to dishing out. Just say what you mean. Once you win their loyalty, there's second to none. But Hartford is the three stations that were here when I came. Hartford was the graveyard of evangelists. There were more demons loose in New England than anywhere else in the Western Hemisphere, because the devil made sure there would never be a repeat of Jonathan Edwards. So there's two classes of people that have proved to me that they're human. Everybody in this generation, and then at a second level, if you're from New England, you got to prove it twice. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
My wife calls to go through the messages. She calls. When there's a message like this, it gets to me. Friday or Saturday, one of our king's houses called and said, pray for my boy. He's been shot in the head. My wife would have called. I would have prayed. So would she. Sunday, second message comes. My boy didn't make it. Please pray for the family that we can keep the faith. We got neither message. Tuesday, My wife is in the counting room, and it's just in a disorganized stack. Now, it's not the first time, it's not the second time, not the third time, not the fourth time, not the fifth time. It's, I don't know how many times. This woman has been told to sort the messages and the kind of messages she's to get to us. She's fired. She's banned. It's willful, deliberate disobedience and a blockade. A blockade against the people getting the messages through. Now, I dealt with this stuff for years. The congregation couldn't believe. You know, you're dumb. Most of my congregation is so dumb, if they'd been around Jesus, they would have insisted that he throw Judas out before the cross. You think Jesus didn't know what Judas was? He ordained him. Sent him out with the 70. Made him part of the 12. Do I think it was predestined that Judas? No, one of the 12 was going to fail. There ain't no way that Jesus didn't see the symptoms. And when the alabaster box incident and the treasure, Judas carrying the money, exposed himself and his carnal attitude, then the devil entered into him and took him into perdition. It's always money. Church has always had a problem with those who touch the money and musicians. I believe in giving people second chances. When they fall down, get a point in the right direction and give them another chance. This woman might get another chance. I don't know. There's a long record of people that have done things equally bad that get other chances, but not without facing herself. Lives in the balance on Saturday night. And she won't do her job. More concerned about coming to work and avoiding getting in trouble than taking responsibility. Zero tolerance for that now, and that scares some of you that don't want to come work. Well, I'm not sure God can help you with that attitude. You haven't got the guts for a God who died for you that the soldiers have that are over there in that foolish war in Iraq. Luke 14 still rules. You ought to read it once a day. When the Spirit taps you on the shoulder, you don't have a choice. You're doomed or you follow. Fired another woman today. She meant a problem, nothing but a problem. Just a hard head. Now, I'm the only man in the world who thinks women are superior. At least I'm the only one that'll say it, admit it. But don't expect me to be a feminist. If I want a job done, I'm going to get a woman to do it. Men are too egotistical and lazy. Can't take orders. But you give a woman an inch, she becomes a ruler. My wife's tough, but she knows who the boss is. She's the only person I've ever met that intimidates me with her brain. But I'm still the boss. She don't like that, much as I love her. Why? Same with this church. As long as I'm pastor, I'm the boss. Not discussable. Don't have to be right. Just have to be in the right place where God put me. As long as I'm right 70% of the time, I'm better than most people. But you better act like I'm right 100% of the time. Yes, it's not a cult. Go to God's Word and argue with what I'm telling you. That's what rules. Rules me. God's Word says God gave some apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers for perfecting the saints. I've heard this 1,000 times. Find me a verse that says God gave saints to perfect pastors. It ain't your job. That's God's job. He ain't got time to deal with all of you. That's my assignment. I'm His assignment. Really, it's simple, you know. Don't complicate the simple. A mistake was made. An $800 check went to this woman with $800 written up in the number section where you write a check and written out in the written part, $8,000. This hard-headed woman, I hope she's listening, because she is a hard-head and she's old enough to think that the age gives her a right that it doesn't give her. She went to the bank. And the teller at the bank told her to scratch out the $1,000 and write in $100. That's altering a check, which is a crime. And she left it at the bank that way. And then she writes a letter. And on the outside of the letter, problem concerning a check to Dr. Scott and Melissa Scott. Well, now let's announce, Pastor made a mistake. Help yours. With a vibrating sledgehammer, with the hope it reaches where your brains ought to be. And then the letter. Would you call the bank and tell them this is okay or that's the gist of it? We stop payment on the check. That was it right now. The minute the woman got the check, she had one duty. Get a little old ass in here to the cathedral and stand in line, or to the studio and stand in line until she could tell us of the mistake. But no, she has to be like Ham, who got cursed by God. Let's trumpet the mistake. Let's go to the bank and make the bank trumpet it. Idiotic! She was paid to work at home and transcribe because she was such an irritant. God couldn't be in the same room with her. Mercy runs out with me after a while. She lost all of her savings in the stock crash. She was reduced after a lifetime of hard work and competence to managing an apartment for a pittance, and she was given a job out of mercy, and then became such an obnoxious, bossy old bitch that she had to be sent home, and still to give mercy, pay her to sit home and transcribe when we have hosts of volunteers doing it. Shem and Japheth covered Noah, and he was doing something wrong. This was a simple mistake on a check. There was only one act. Bring it back. Don't create a third world war over it. And then take it to the bank. And I had to go to the bank because my bills are due. My rent's due or something. She wouldn't have enough money to even live where she's living if we ain't paying her faithfully every time, right on time. All she had to do was turn right around the minute she got the check. 24 hours, we'd get her kicked out of her rent place. Give me a break. Don't insult me with your stupidity. You're just a know-it-all, obnoxious, greedy little, got away with your obnoxiousness bitch the rest of your life, and then you run into this guy that just looks for bitches like that to tell you, you've reached the end of your line, you're out of the church, you're fired, and you will crawl back figuratively and apologize without some kind of qualification, or don't ever think about coming to this church again. Anybody else with her attitude, will you get out before I throw you out? Is that clear enough? You want some more? Well, I can give them. I can give them by the dozens. You could be so lucky as to come and work for me and my wife. You pass muster with us, you can make it anywhere in the world. But stay in your little yuppie world where your excuses are bought by everybody who hates your guts anyway and just wants to use you. And it's it's a game like I've often used as the illustration. Most of you work in places where you might as well be going to a whore on Sunset Strip that tells you your pencil's a tank. As long as you pay or as long as you get the job done, they don't care about your eternal soul. They don't care whether you make progress in dying to self. They don't care whether you learn to be honest. They don't care whether you learn to be selfless. They don't care whether you learn to find your place in the body of Christ. They don't care whether you make it to heaven or not. This is a generation that has perfected the art of mutual ego stroking. Stay there and die. Christ died for you, bought you with his blood. You're his slave. If that isn't a doctrine you understand and have embraced, you're not even a Christian. You're going to make it to heaven, preferring your family, catering to your friends, putting yourself first. You're going to make it to heaven. Well, I thought you taught all the necessary faith. Yeah, the other side of faith is faithfulness. And it's the faith of Christ, which is keeping commitment and dying to self, to do what he did, make a contribution to God's redemptive plan. You're lucky. I'm really giving it the truth to you unadorned. I'm getting close to doing that on Sunday morning. If I start doing that on Sunday morning, they'll start going out the door. I don't really care. You better understand that this pastor has come to the point that I was when I came here 29 years ago to a sick congregation, most of whom I had to eliminate, and a bunch of overpaid staff people that had about as much commitment as any stray dog you can find on the street. I came to town looking for the uncommon man and woman, and you better understand that God has no grandchildren, and some of you parents better figure out you can't pass on your commitment to your kids. You can only make them respect you, the church, and the pastor, and learn what they can learn. But somewhere they're going to have to learn to die to self also. Is that clear? Get back on the telephone. You know, I would feel good if about three women for each of those two we fired, or men, would say, I'll take their place. And I will commit myself to doing what I'm told to do. It's really not complicated. I don't want any people coming in here to rescue this ministry. I don't want any home run kings. 90% of your life belongs to you and God. I tell you, every part of your life is the Lord's. Some of you have important businesses, and if you have a business, you've got the same problem I have. Staff people that'll be loyal and do what they're told. Everybody wants authority without responsibility. Authority is right. I mean, I've said these things until there are echoes off the wall. Authority is right and capacity to author. Some people have the capacity. In fact, everybody thinks they have the capacity. Everybody wants to make the decision and author. I want to do it. I have some positive suggestions. I mean, this is the way I'd do it. You don't have the right. I have the right, by law, no matter what anybody does in this church, I am the target the government will come after. Doesn't matter what anybody does. I have the right to make the decision, and thus I'm held responsible. It's wonderful if you have someone that has both the right. I'm the legally elected pastor. I have the right. Let's forget God and forget the Bible. Legally, I have the right. Period. Biblically, I'm the under-shepherd that will stand before the chief shepherd and give account. Not you. So I have a right. God gave some apostles. Well, maybe it wasn't God that had you elected. Too late to change it. But the evidence suggests it was the right choice. You're lucky if you have capacity and right in the same person. But you don't destroy the position because you got an incompetent person with the right. Responsibility is right and capacity to respond. I have the responsibility, the right. I've proven the capacity. I haven't put any debt on this church. I led the paying of the debt. We start a secret. We're going to make it, and if you don't, I find another way to do it. I'm the author and the responder. I know how to delegate authorship, which is the right to make a mistake, which is the right I have since I take the responsibility. You don't have the right to presume authority delegated. I have the right to tell you, take charge of this. I have the right to hold you responsible, make you respond to what you did, but ultimately the authority came from me and the responsibility ends with me. And if I delegate responsibility and authorship, you're going to account to me. It's the way it is. It's the way the world's supposed to work. And everybody wants authority. And then just when it blows up, they want to say, sorry, sir, and go off their independent way and mess something else up. Once the problem has happened, the disaster's occurred, I'm responsible, I pay for it. That's history. The only good that can come of it is if I can make you truly see the wrong that you've done and have true remorse for it and a learning experience that will lessen the chance of the same mistake repeating. It's that simple. So I have all these little independent kingpins. I'm down now to just one little circle. I wouldn't sell Secret One because of its spiritual meaning to get Hope Street. I'm telling you as a congregation that I'm down now to where I have two old guard members that know more about the operation of that place than I do. I can't maintain it. My wife can't. All the security and everything that's involved, we have volunteers that are helping, but if these last two old guard people cannot get their act together, their attitude and their crucifixion, as I said, I don't have to shut the church down anymore, but I can sell Secret One. Then I'm rid of these two. Why don't you sit down? I'm going to tell you an interesting story. One of these two people they have an absolute rule. You probably, most of you do not know what it's like. The President of the United States knows what it's like. to never have privacy. To not be able to go to bed at night and get up in the morning and go out of your house without being ambushed. Everybody who works for me has a chance to go home once in a while. Shut the door. But it's nonstop, 24 hours a day, around the world. As much as we try to screen and prioritize, and try to find moments when I can study and assemble things and get ready for Sunday, no privacy. But the key staff aides are supposed to be there to protect me, not be to shield me, not to be a dagger. Now, they're out of the normal circuit. POs, purchase orders. You don't let people buy things and then receive the bill. You control finance at the initiation place. POs. This ministry runs like the pot when Elijah came to the widow at Zarephath. It seems that what we need comes in. I learned many years ago in God's work, you try to bring things in budget and run like the world runs. No, you run by faith. And we pay as we go. I built the ministry on cash flow and built up assets so there would be the transition assets if something happened to me. Now, these two guys that work at my and Secret One, they have very little to do. Just protect me. Do a little bit of cleaning here and there. So they're out of the main circuit. POs are handled a certain way. Every department, you may try to conceive of how many different people have needs. And there are basic rules. You never use the last of anything. Well, I tuned in for ministry today. You're getting it. Common sense ministry. You never use the last of anything. When you come to the last package, if it's a package of four light bulbs, you don't dip into that last package without filling out a PO. Now, before my wife came, we're chasing POs all over the world. I mean, it seems not quite, but it seems like. There was even, I'd get an aging sometime of POs that are lined up and waiting. No POs are put off. POs either turned down because it's senseless and somebody wanted to order 6 months worth of supplies so they didn't have to do it again. Like somebody's making tapes. Here's an order for 1,000 blank tapes for tape stock. Well, now, he's making tapes reel to reel, three at a time at the most, an hour tape takes. He couldn't use 1,000 tapes in a month. But I want to take my dump. Don't have to think about it anymore. Just give me tapes on the shelf, so I don't have to think about it anymore. No, you budget your tape use and you order consistently. My wife releases and pays POs once a week. All the POs are gathered, paid once a week. POs must be put in except in absolute emergency where something breaks in, so right now. Routine POs are put in 2 weeks in advance. You know when you're down to the last package of something, you don't use the last package. You don't use the last tape. We even have so many hours extra tape stock on the shelf in case something goes wrong. I go to the hospital and everything stops for a while. It ain't complicated. What's lacking is obedience. You're not the only cog in this wheel. It's the way we do things. Now this is going to be the longest speech. This is again Gene Scott taking a mountain and producing a mouse. Or turning a mouse hole into a mountain, one or the other. Because I'm going to a point that this long build-up is for, to fascinate you with, you think you're getting a dirty laundry behind the scenes. This is, in the olden days, these were the best festivals because you got to look in on all the problems. Secret One is out of the loop. They have a spatial system. They put the POs in an envelope outside the kitchen door, where I pick up the newspaper every morning, try to have a breakfast without having to field 4 or 5 telephone calls in the middle of the breakfast. They know that's the first act. It doesn't matter what time I pick it up. They know when the newspaper's picked up, the day starts in terms of access. And I need to get that newspaper and get to my breakfast table, take communion, get myself ready for the day, put on the armor of God. They know that. You don't have to know that. Even my aides. 20 years training. You know. And they have it easy. They don't have to travel to a certain place and put the POs in. All they have to do is put a PO on the kitchen step where the newspaper is. And my wife picks them up personally after the day starts. After the day starts. After the newspaper's been picked up. You know, it's something. I don't know if any of you ever go out your door to get the paper in pajamas, or you women ever go out before you have your face on. We're not allowed that. Like piranhas, they're waiting. I don't think many of you understand how big this organization is. We do more with fewer people than any organization on the face of this globe. So they put POs on the kitchen door. Isn't this fascinating? This ought to be way up on the Nielsen ratings if we're on regular. Simple, isn't it? Fill out the PO, put on it after the day starts. Doesn't matter which day, they're going to lay it there and my wife's going to pick them up, and she will only pay the POs once a week. And unlike everybody else that has to have a PO in 2 weeks in advance, they only have to have it in a week in advance. Well, and again, I have to keep my brain like a computer, remembering every little detail. Because when busted, they're going to try some manipulative defense, and I have to remember the facts, like I've got a tape recording to straighten the facts out, because they're going to twist them to explain their deviancy. A couple, 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago, I came out to get my paper. And I came out to get it about 8:45 or 9 o'clock. That most of the night, have prayer time before I get the paper, then have breakfast and take communion. And my wife and I now separate for the day. She handles the administration. I go to get my paper. Laying on top of the paper, it's a PO. We had come in about midnight the night before, and there were no POs there. So this staff member had come to work at 8:30, and somewhere between 8:30 and 8:45 or 9 o'clock, before I picked my paper up, made sure that I had to confront business before I could even pick up the paper, have breakfast, and do what, believe it or not, ordinary people do, go to the toilet. So why chastise him? He wouldn't come clean and be honest and say that he had put POs down earlier that same week, and my wife had picked them up routinely and not told me. And I know we're coming to 8 o'clock. I don't care. I'm going right through the hour. It's our time. We pay for it. And short way people can figure out when I suck in my breath, they make their announcement. He wouldn't tell me. He had already put the POs for the week, he thought, and my wife had picked him up routinely, going to pay him on the once a week payout. No reason for her to tell me. She picks them up, keeps them where they're supposed to be. He had forgotten something. So he comes at 8:30 and sneaks it on the paper before I come to pick the paper up. So I chastise him pretty severely. Chastise him for hiding the fact, because my wife came out in the process of me chastising him and forced him to admit that he had put the POs out earlier and she'd already picked them up. And this is some, I forgot one, and I'm going to slip this one in. Now it ceases to be what appears to be the issue of putting the PO in the wrong place at the wrong time. He covered his ass. The chastisement was simple. The POs go on the porch, but they don't go on that porch before I pick up my paper. He said, well, that's a little thing. That's a little foxes that spoil the vine. Because we're in spiritual warfare, and I can tell you, wherever I draw a line, the devil finds somebody that will cross that line. Other lines become unimportant. This is spiritual warfare. All I got was defense. And he was told he better never put a TO down. I don't mind if he's put one down the previous day and we came in and saw it and decided to leave it there. I know it's there before I go open the door. But he better never put a TO after he comes to work at 8:30 on my newspaper. I'm paying him. I have a right to say that. What is this? Well, you get the work done. Well, you know, you better figure out you're working for the Lord of the work. Anybody ever got a check signed by WORK? It doesn't work that way. Today we had an incident. I get by on anywhere from 2 to 4 hours sleep a night. And it's not unusual at all to be in bed at 4 or 4:30 or 5. So this morning, it's another one of those days I got the paper about 9 o'clock or something like that. Now, I have another rule. You can see how impossible it is to work for me. Each of those two guys, sometime between Tuesday and Thursday, they're there all the time, they're to request. Request an audience for a plate. They're to itemize the things that are not right nows, but that need to be treated, and requests or problems that they have. And POs are not on the plate. POs are supposed to be on the kitchen door or kitchen steps where the newspaper is, where they put the newspaper, but they're never to put the PO there until the newspaper's picked up. That ain't complicated, is it? So that's not a plate item. Not at all a plate item. It's probably the best festival I've had in a long time, because I'm this is training before you go to work. These are simple little rules. You don't make a plate item out of POs. The only PO that you need is a pipe burst, and you got to go get a part, and you shouldn't have to do that because you never should have used the last part that's on the shelf. Right? If you don't use the last thing, you always got a part. So I'm not afraid of them. POs go on the kitchen steps. You just don't put it there before I pick my newspaper up. You wait till the business day starts and you put it there, and then sometime during the day, my wife will come and go through that door and put it where it goes to be paid once a week. Isn't that simple?
Yes, sir.
I think most of you parents could probably train your 10-year-old to do that. Please don't put it there before the paper comes up. Paddle him often enough, he ain't going to put it there. Now, there's another rule. You two guys got from Tuesday to Thursday to ask for an audience to empty your plate. And you got a responsibility to churn your plate of things that you think need to be dealt with that are sort of routine. And you can only bring up so many items at one audience. You can ask for 5 audiences a week, but there's a limit. I listen to every word when somebody's talking to me, and I memorize the words while they're saying it. There's only so much that I can give that concentration to without having to have a break. So you only have so many items at each audience. I remember the man that was the religious affairs secretary that used to be my student at Evangel College that came by. You may remember him. He was Ronald Reagan's religious affairs secretary, and he wanted me to go in to the White House and go and meet. He was going to arrange a meeting with Reagan in the Oval Office. I didn't go, didn't want to go. But he delivered all the information to me. I had only so much time. Had to write on one sheet of paper what it was I was going to bring up and talk about. And there could be no more than 7 items, and there was this much time. And whether I was finished or not, I go in one door, and someone else opens the back door, and I go out that door, whether I'm finished or not. There's this sandwich of time, only that much. I happen to believe my job is more important than the president's. But I'm dealing with a bunch of redneck ignoramuses, or self-styled yuppie computer nerd yuppies that have never learned any discipline in their whole life. Probably the biggest thing they've ever seen is the corner service station. And they have nothing. And because familiarity breeds contempt, as Nazareth that kept Jesus from doing miracles, they fail to understand, I'm trained to run a university. Don't talk to me about not knowing how to run something. I know how to do it. I just lost patience with trying to make ignoramuses understand that they get an education just working with me. To bring their set of values and never rise to mine but want to pull me down to theirs. You ask for an audience. Now you got all these elements of these rules. It ain't very complicated. I've only introduced about 3. They're out of the loop. They don't have to go through the jump over the crossbars of the other people. Just fill out the PO and put it on the kitchen. But don't do it before I pick up the newspaper. Ask for an audience. Sometime during that 3 days, there is a time when a conversation is going on that is not one where I've got a tight agenda and I've got to get this done. No, there's... may I have an audience sometime this week? Got 3 items, nothing worth shaking. You ask for the audience. Then you get the audience and you empty your plate. Is that clear? Okay. There are special kinds of orders that I give. We coined the phrase footballs. There are things in which I say, you do this. If not something that goes in a list and you then organize it to fit into your routines of daily work. This just came, you've got to handle this. That's a football. You pass a football, it's got to be caught, and we're playing catch football, and I want it back. That means if I give you a football assignment at 10 o'clock in the morning, and you're at my house, you don't go to bed that night. You stand outside the gate if you have to. You don't go to bed. You don't leave. You don't check out until you report the football and the results and what you've accomplished and whether you got it done, or you report an unfinished assignment that carries over till tomorrow. And it's still a football. Is that simple? Now, strangers and least of all government people don't come on my property without me knowing it. Some nitwit showed up the ranch earlier this week from some phone company. He's wrong. They didn't have a right of way, but he was all mixed up. Some new, they hire people in the summer that not only don't have brains, but are not regular. And they show up, you know, I'm coming, I got to go check this. I don't know what it was, Viatea or something. We got to check a pole on your 26-acre ranch. Well, you make an appointment. And then nobody comes here before 11 o'clock. So he comes back again, your turn. Then he says, well, I'm going and getting a sheriff's car, and when I come back, he'll drive me in here. Now you played hell, as the translator said. So this jerk had to be educated, and the sheriff knows better. You know, don't try that stuff on me. Government, most of you just lay down and let them come into your house and do anything they want, anytime they want to do it. So we have this problem every year that they got to come and check a backwash on something. I don't even know what the backwash is. Don't have to know. Pay people to do it. Now, one of these guys does it every year. Well, now, again, they're going to come at a day of our convenience and at a time. Oh, meter readers don't just walk into our place. You know, they think they own you. That's what he's here for. So we get the letter from the city, going to do the annual backwash. I hand it to this same guy, the appeal guy. Will you schedule this? He knows the rule. He calls them. He finds what times they're available, and then of the options, he comes to me, and I clear, preferably one of the days I know I'm not going to be on the grounds. I have problems. Every bureau in this state, every bureau in this city, probably got somebody who watches TBN and thinks I'm of the devil. When you've been here as long as I've been, you make a lot of friends and you make a lot of enemies. I don't need some asteroid orifice coming on my property that decides that I am somehow of the devil because I won't buy their cheap Christianity. Who can claim personal knowledge and run off and sell a story to the National Enquirer? Most of you people don't have that problem. I have it, and it affects the church. And I have survived because I know how to survive if I get people to follow my orders. Nobody comes on the ground. You come down. I'm a fire inspector. I'm coming into the church. Try it. They've tried it. They make appointments. Ain't no fire in there. I don't need you. I don't need some jack-legged bureaucrat keeping me honest. There's more honesty in every square centimeter of flesh in my church than all the bureaucratic offices in the world. That's a fight I had with every government agency I fought with. I don't need them to keep me honest. They need us to keep them honest. There's more lying crookedness in the government than there is in the worst churches in America. So don't put me on the defensive. You want to come, you ask. You make an appointment. He knows all these rules. You call the backwash guy, you ask who's available, does somebody that's been there before, and what times have they got. Then he comes to me, it's to football, before he goes home that day. Here are the options. Well, this morning, I've got to add one more rule. Now, you got a list of four? You think you can memorize this if you got paid and sat down and tried to memorize these four things for a week before you started working? There's one more. When I say I'm leaving, you see, everybody around me is like piranhas. They've got a long list, a long want list. They don't want to have to churn it and prioritize it. Everybody wants to go home at night, make love to their wife, and go to sleep with no problems because they dumped all their crap on me. No, you learn to get some sphincter muscles and you learn to prioritize, and you get a to-do list, and you either scratch it out with a little CO in your to-do list that carried over till the next day, and you only get so many things. I never can go home at the end of the day with all my work done. President of the United States never gets his work done. That's a laborer's mentality. In management, you have to prioritize, and you go home at night with some anxiety because some things had to be put over. That's the way life is. And I wish I could speak the way I speak to them. Crap travels down. It's a good thing that God put that hole on the bottom side, not on the top, since he invented gravity. Crap travels down. Is that hard to understand?
Yes, sir.
But everybody wants to upend themselves and shoot it up to me. I got workers walking on their hands and crapping upward on me all day long. Now, that's pretty easy to remember when I do it that colorfully, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Now, you develop the ability to stay a little bit constipated in your head. Because you can't take a dump on me every time I go by. And one thing is certain, nobody ever gets it all out. And what I'm talking about. When I say I'm going, when I say I'm leaving, I don't care. You had all the time you're going to get. You missed your chance. You weren't quick enough. Whatever. When I say I'm going, zip the lip. If you were about to tell me the cathedral's on fire, too late. No exception. When you hear the words, I'm leaving, you become a mute. Is that hard to understand? No exceptions. You may have to get in the car and race to the next place I'm going and beg for another appointment. When I say I'm leaving, it's over. Buh, 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 buh. One more thing. No. You want that arm cut off at the armpit? Clear enough?
Yes, sir.
No exception. Otherwise, the devil can trivialize my whole day away. I do know how to prioritize, even though my staff doesn't. And I think for 29, now almost 30 years, I've been ready, no matter what the hours, if it had to be all night. I don't think you've ever seen me come to the pulpit without being ready. I may be ready with the message God doesn't want, and he and I may have an argument, and so forth. He usually wins. But I'm ready. I know what my priority is. I'm at that pulpit on Sunday morning. And I got to be ready. That's why I'm here. Not to have you tell me why you have difficulty figuring which end of a paper clip to put on top of the paper and whether it's on the right side or the left side. When I say I'm leaving, that goes for my wife. We are facing coronas all day. We got appointments we have to make. When we say we're leaving, when we come out that door, we want to walk to our car, get in the car, and you better not even try body language on me. You know that. If you look at me, you can see I got something. I've got to take an upward crap. Not allowed. Now, is that hard to understand? So the P.O. guy, everybody knew we were running late. And this morning, I go for a walk if I can every morning for health reasons. I was really happy. I got tired of my wife walking one step ahead of me, and I'm getting ready for my 75-mile bike ride, and there's a very steep hill by our house. You need to go there sometime and go up Bonita. A hill like those you saw me used to ride the bikes at the ranch up the steep hill. And somebody said I cheated when I beat my wife up there because you're wrong. She thought I was stopping, and they said I tricked her by making her think I was stopping, and then she stopped and I kept going so I could win. Steep hill, and you know she's a speed walker. I get tired of her being always a step ahead of me walking. So we came to the foot of this hill this morning, and I just took off and ran up the hill. I was so proud of myself. When I came in the yard, I was really happy. And here's this P.O. guy. By now it's 10:30 or 11, I don't know. And he's supposed to, at 8:30, the first thing he does is detail my wife's car, because he knows she's the one that's leaving first. That's what he's paid to do. When we went out for the walk, he's puttering around with her car. And when we came back, he's still puttering around with her car. I don't know what he did from 8:30 until then. I tell him to take, and I'd ask for a box of the new pulpit to be brought out there so that I could have a supply for my use. And I told him to take it around to a certain bookshelf and put it there in the back. But I said, this is your cue. Don't do it until you finish detailing my wife's car. He'd been doing it for God knows how long. Because she is going to leave immediately. Now that shuts the faucet off, doesn't it? She's gone. Get her car detailed because she's leaving right away. And we went in the house. She still had to go upstairs and get ready and gather up all her stuff and get ready to go, and it took at least 30 minutes. And she comes out on the back porch where I'm studying and kisses me bye and leaves to go out the door. And here is this P.O. guy standing between her car and the kitchen door like a piranha. It's Thursday. Put off Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday to the end. Mrs. Scott, would this be a convenient time to bring up some items? Now, would you tell me, I think I speak the English language. Is that a request for an audience? No. He took the audience. In other words, I'm not asking for an audience later in the week. I've already put it off till Thursday and had at least 50 opportunities to ask for an audience between Tuesday and Thursday. But now it's Thursday. Mrs. Scott, would this be a convenient time to bring up some items? What can she do? Here are the items. Would it be okay for the backwash man to come here at 10 o'clock tomorrow? The football, when I gave it to him, I forgot about it. I don't have to keep notes. I'd given him that football a week ago. He never reported back. He never came to me with the options. He never asked which of the options I would accept, and then got the permission. And anybody that's booked to come, there must be at least a week's notice. And then he has the duty to remind us starting 48 hours before the man comes. But he short-circuited it all, took charge, didn't come back with the football at all, and bushwhacks her this morning, and it wasn't her assignment to him, it was mine. I gave him the assignment, and bushwhacks her, and she knew the right answer. No! 10 o'clock tomorrow morning's not a week's notice. She didn't know about the football. Second item. Well, I have some POs. I haven't turned any in for several weeks. Get ready. This is what this hour-long speech is about. This ought to be a classic festival. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
Why aren't you firing? Well, it probably started as I love him, in spite of the fact God loves him, and then, you know, he's perfected the art of, sorry, sir, give me another chance. But even more important, as recent as a week ago, though, for the last 5 years, I've asked him to diagram every single thing on that place that until the knowledge that his power is put into a manual and we know where things are. We had an emergency and had to bring him on his day off or something. He wasn't there to come and show us down in the jungle somewhere where the turnoff valve was. They hold on to this like secret gold possessions, because once that they're no longer necessary, like this studio, we're still trying. And there's a coined word around here about Mickisms. We're still trying to find where the scotch tape and bubble gum connection. We brought in high-powered engineers that can't figure out what connects to what because of the scotch tape and bubble gum way in which they would improvise instead of holding their hand up. And the major thing my wife has accomplished is to just about unravel. We haven't got it all, but just about unravel until we have control and know. It's a miracle that this ministry has been able to exist. He has knowledge. I've already said, I've made my mind up. I'm going to sell it. I will not be in this. At least I don't have to shut the ministry down. I can just cut that piece out of it. As sacred as it's been in my own heart and spirit. I don't care. I can live in a tent. I don't care where I live. The happiest times I've had in ministry is when I was living in a hotel. I thought that was bad because maids couldn't even read the color. And they would, when 3 o'clock comes and they go home, they're going to come in no matter how big you write the letters, no, do not disturb. I will not stay in prison any longer. But let me finish this story. We haven't turned the POs in. I haven't turned any in for weeks. Well, now, quite naturally, she said, what are you talking about? You put them on the kitchen porch. Now, there's only one answer. This is what the whole story was about. There's only one legitimate answer. And I can look around this room, and I feel like walking around this room, putting my finger right between the eyes of about five people that are sitting in here that would do the same thing that this P.O. guy did. But I'm not allowed to put them on the kitchen porch. Pitting my wife against me, defending his asininity, there was only one answer. How many times have you heard me tell the story? The sergeant in the boot camp knocks the hat off of the guy down on the floor. Who put that hat on the floor, private? Or soldier, who put that hat on the floor? And the facts are the sergeant knocked it off. But the first lesson this soldier better learn in boot camp, he better not come back with, well, you did, sir. He better not even say, I don't know. I did, sir. May I have permission to pick it up, please? Now, that's such a ridiculous story that, ha, 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 that applies to everybody but me. But if I'm corrected, how many times you heard this story? I may have burglarized the house, raped the mother, sodomized the kids, but you will not report the whole event and say I came through the window because I came through the back door. It was unlocked. You're to blame. You left it open. What happened, Adam? The woman you gave me. You're to blame. If you hadn't given me the woman, I wouldn't have been in this problem. What happened, Eve? The serpent made me do it. If you had kept the serpent out of the garden, this wouldn't have happened. Paint my black gray. There was only one answer. Yes, 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 and I'll put them there. Well, I'm not allowed to put them on the porch anymore. Now I've explained why I haven't turned any POs in, why I'm desperate. He was not allowed to put POs on the porch before the newspaper was picked up. Period. But let's assume that Mrs. Scott did not know, and I had ordered him to never put a PO on the porch anywhere, anytime. When she came, speaking for me, doesn't matter if he was told yesterday, don't you ever put a PO on that porch. When she came out and he hit her with the PO and she said, why are you putting them off? Why haven't you done any POs? They go on the porch. Put them on the porch. End of discussion. They go on the porch. She said that's where they go. So you goony bird had better salute and say, yes, ma'am. I'll put them there. not the right answer to say, well, I'm not allowed to put them on the porch anymore. He didn't say anymore. He said, I'm not allowed to put them on the porch. You got the picture? Multiply it every hour on the hour. Not only did he violate the football rule, not only did he violate the rule to request an audience and simply took control and said, is this a convenient time? Not only did he misconstrue the order about POs before the newspapers picked up, and he plants a question mark in my wife that she is somehow doing something that's contrary to what I've told him, because how would she know but what just an hour earlier I told him he can't put them on the porch? I must paint my white, my black, gray. I want to have all the benefits of Jesus Christ, who died and was crucified and poured out his blood for my sins that he didn't commit. But by God in heaven, you will not let me have even a straw on my shoulder that I don't think I'm guilty of. And you think you've got a prayer of standing before the God of eternity, unwilling to bear blame for the cause of Christ for anything? If you're going to repent of what you think you just did, you have no room in your life for the sin offering. You will only offer the trespass offering, the sin you know about. And you've forgotten the other part of it. You do recompense and restitution for the sins you know about. You need a sin offering for the condition of sin and the sins of ignorance. I am tired of having to be perfect. I don't mind having to be right before God. I am fed up to here having to be right before peanut brains in their eyes. The issue is not being right before God. The administrative pastor told you, they go on the porch. No more to discuss. Yes, ma'am. I am tired. As God got tired of Israel playing mental assayer with him. He could deliver them from Egypt. He could part the Red Sea. He could give them water in the desert. He could sweeten the water. They could bring water out of a rock. And he could deliver them from the Ammonites because Moses had his hands up. And every new test, they were right. They were the judge. They put God to test. Now, I'm saying to this congregation and to my staff what I said to the congregation many years ago on a Sunday morning. I am on trial from you the last second of my life. You're all on trial with me. And you're on trial primarily with your ability to take blame whether you think you deserve it or not. You turn your 2% into 100% of error. I will then sort it out, and I got a long proven record of being fair. And my discernment usually sorts it all out. This jerk excused his own dereliction. I'm not allowed to put it on the porch. The allower, the administrative pastor, just 5 seconds earlier told him to put it on the porch. You don't pit me against my wife, and you don't pit her against me. If she says it, I don't care what you heard me say earlier, you do what she says. If I say it, I don't care what you heard her say earlier, you do what I say. That was then, this is now. You are not a referee. You're not a judge. You're a paid employee. Or a volunteer that made a vow to God that you would come here and do what we tell you to do. And if I can't be fair as the whole stream plays out, you ought to get your ass out of this church and go somewhere else anyway. I don't need you doing the evaluating. That's what's taken most of you to hell. All you that listen to me, look right at the TV. Paul says he doesn't even judge himself. You carry a great weight if you make it to heaven. Someone bore your blame who deserved nothing. He had the sins laid on him that you will yet commit. Before this day is over, you will commit sins in spirit, ignorance, or deliberate before you lay your head on your pillow tonight that he died for. And you dare to come into the Church of Jesus Christ and put your pastor on trial to justify your egocentric, prideful, derelict ways. There is no lesson you could learn from here to eternity like welcoming humiliation as the route to humility and welcoming correction, particularly from a pastor who loves you, as a way at least of saying, I can't improve my salvation status. You paid it all, Jesus. But I can thank God that this old man that put you there, these sins in my nature, I have a chance to cooperate in beating the crap out of them. I see a couple of people looking at me big-eyed that will walk right out of here and give them the chance tomorrow. Well, why did you do this? Well, here, wait a minute. Let me pull out of my file the memos. And here, you signed a memo. Or have maybe two pages of stuff and capital letters here and there. And I'd learned to trust this person, so just as a matter of form, after a while, I don't read every line that he comes with it. He's doing a good job, so I initial it. I didn't know that he was getting these memos and keeping a file, so if I ever corrected him, he could say, it's your fault, you signed this piece of paper. I don't even want to look at him. Stiff-necked, arrogant. And all the time that I've known him, he's never finished the job I've given him. He ought to be named 90% Doolittle. He never finished a job that I've given him. But he's going to protect himself for being blamed for not crossing a T when he's got the proof he crossed it. Chastised a guard at the gate for letting somebody in. Want to hear some more of this? Air conditioning needed to be fixed at the main house of the ranch. So-and-so, we have a fixed air conditioning man we always call. You call him and have him come and look at it. A week goes by. It's a football. I don't hear anything. Go back up there and the air conditioning's not quite right. So-and-so, let me call her BB. BB, did you call JJ, the one that's cleared? Well, no, sir, I couldn't reach him, but I got another air conditioning man in Monrovia. Nobody comes on our property without clearance with me. The other man's been cleared. He's been in the house. You mean you took a football? Well, what do you mean he wouldn't come? I'm going to fire his. Well, I call his answering machine. He wouldn't call me back. And you wouldn't report that my order given to you, you reached a glitch and you wouldn't hold your hand up and you improvised and decided you would find from the Yellow Pages an air conditioning man that might be married to the daughter of a preacher that hates me. And you brought him on the ranch and then you lied to the guard at the gate and told him it was with my permission? Who did you report this to? Well, I told somebody, but I didn't make sure you got the message. Lying and wiggling. Who's the somebody? The code name on radio for my wife, Base 2. You mean you told Base 2? Now, I have to play referee. Let me skip along because we're running out of time. You know what the truth is? My wife went to her on another matter that had to do with the refrigerator. And she told her that the air conditioning was fixed. It was just a small Freon leak. Nothing in what she told my wife. She didn't go to my wife. She didn't report anything. My wife went to her, and she told her that the air conditioning was fixed because it just had a small Freon leak. Not one word about, I didn't get the man Doc told me to. I didn't report that he wouldn't come or that I didn't reach him. I didn't report and didn't tell her that I got a stranger that wasn't cleared and brought him on, lied to the guard at the gate. Are you on the page with me? Ain't complicated. Transfer the order into getting the job done and then do it my way so I don't have to deal with the boss. I know how to say, get this job done. I don't want to know the details. Just get it done. But when I give you a football, I'm still in control. I want to report. You run into a glitch, you hold your hand up, or you stop and go no further. It ain't complicated, is it? So now I have to deal with the guard at the gate. Are you telling me that you let a person that's never been on this ranch before on with somebody telling you it was with Doc's authority? I hate that statement. With Doc's authority. Sometime before the flood, I said, you know, it would be nice if we could accomplish this purpose of widening our ministry, and well, that's good enough. Now, anything that they do from now until Jesus comes, if they think it's widening the ministry, they can deduce it's with Doc's authority. You that work for me, you know the question is, did Doc today tell you to do this? And just to check on them, particularly if you're the security guard at the gate and somebody's coming in, what time today did he tell you? Because I have all kinds of these people say, per Doc, Doc's authority. This is an out of routine stranger coming on the grounds. Well, while I'm dealing with the problem, I then have the security guard, who's one of our, not a paid cop, he's one of our staff, doing the radio. Sir, I checked the logs and I wasn't on when this man came in. It was one of the volunteers. Now, having listened to me for an hour and a half, you can about imagine what I did to him. Not because he let the guy in. That's history. There's nothing to do about it. But that he was more... He didn't go check the logs for my benefit. He was more concerned about going and finding the logs and proving that he wasn't guilty. Daniel prayed he wasn't alive when the Israelites sinned. He wasn't born. He fell on his face before God and confess the sins as his own, begging God to keep the promise to only keep him in bondage for 70 years. You're a product of this generation, me first. And if you don't get delivered from it, you're going to hell. I don't care how much grace you've heard. I don't care how much faith preaching you've heard. I have proven it. You fall down and get up, point in the right direction. I give you another chance. You can't point the right direction if you're defending yourself. Take the blame. Were any of you here a few weeks ago when something was happening and Eli came and stood in front of me and said, "It's my fault, sir. I discern." I said, "No, it isn't. It's not 100% your fault." Were any of you here? You were, Greg. You were on the camera. That's my job. But I'm not allowed to sort it out fairly. When I'm having to hold people apart, I'm 100% innocent. I could go from now until this time tomorrow. This is what my wife fights with all day long. I fought with for 30 years. People, I'm going to repeat it. Yes, I burglarized the house and raped your wife and sodomized your kids, but you will not say I came through the window. I came through that back door that was open. If you hadn't left the door unlocked, none of this would happen. I will fight to the death that if you're going to describe my crime, you be perfectly accurate. Because I got this memo that you signed. I said the leak was fixed, so therefore I reported. Except I left out. I didn't get the man you said. I didn't report the football back. I got somebody else, and I never would have reported that if your wife hadn't come and sought me out. And then I just simply briefly said, it was a freon leak and it was fixed. I'm not hard to work for. I'm easy. Someone very wise years ago said, you are the hardest man in the world to work for and the easiest. Most people you work for in this world, you make an honest mistake and destroy their Cadillac. You're gone. You can run into my $700,000 Rolls-Royce limousine, one of four in the world. In fact, Carl Wayne did, just backed into it. Honest mistake. Mick used to have a suite at the Rose Bowl, remember? Mick went to film. He wouldn't leave the ground. He's filming. The city provided a police escort to take me and the limousine across the golf course to get us out of the traffic. I'm paying no attention. Mick, the same guy that stumbled, knocked my 7th century manuscript over here in front of everybody. Mick's in an old dilapidated Chevy, and he saw us leave and decided, you know what, I'd like to get out of here too. So under the guise of filming, he takes out across the golf course with us, behind us. Now, it's a big shoulder camera, like that. He's driving and using one of these big shoulder cameras to try to act like he's filming. Well, you're looking through a viewfinder. Look through your viewfinder there, John, and try to drive. You can't figure out depth. So, you know, we come out. I don't know he's behind us. He's sneaking across the golf course and getting out of the traffic, and he's filming. I'm filming. He wasn't sent there to film us going over a golf course. Sent there to some other things. So we come out on the 210. The police, the motorcycle waves and stuff. You know, thank you, Dr. Scott. The limousine driver's gone. I'm sitting in the back. And we're going down the 210 where you have to exit and go around underneath. And the traffic piles up as you go off the exit. And bam! Into the back of a $700,000, one of four in the world limousine is Mick runs into the back of us because he's still looking through the viewfinder. Runs into the back. My, yeah. He dashes to the ranch ahead of us, and we get there just as he's fleeing out the gate. And he begs for another chance. And he's good at that. He's perfected the, "Sorry, sir." When we showed the art exhibit down at the cathedral, I have a painting. It's labeled "Sorry, sir." It captures the humble little, "Oh, sorry, sir." In 29 years, not once, has an old guard member spontaneously fallen on their knees in front of me and said, "Against thee, O God, have I sinned." If they'd ruined the thing. It cost $50,000 to repair it, but if they had ruined the thing and put me in the hospital, I would have embraced them to see that. Other businesses look at the bottom line. An executive is to produce 75 times his pay. Didn't take long for the Lakers to get rid of Jackson when he didn't win. I don't look at the bottom line. I look at you as spiritual interns. It's more important to me that you grow spiritually. The crisis of correction is an opportunity for you to face yourself and look through me to the Christ who died for you. And I'm the first to throw my arms around you and forgive you. The crisis of the other night of the usher who gave away the equivalent of, if you want the law of it, equivalent of embezzlement. He's genuinely apologized and genuinely sorry. He's forgiven. He'll be at his post on Sunday. He'll be back here tomorrow night. I'm in trouble forgiving. I'm the easiest in the world to work for because I'm always going to. The deed is done. Nothing we can do about it. Now, can the correction produce a positive result? I'm the hardest to work for because there's nothing you can do for me to compensate for the wrong attitude. The self-pitying, I got to be perfect. I can't afford to make a mistake. I can't live with the fact that I've disappointed you. I mean, if I can't be the hero and knock home runs all the time, I'll be the greatest martyr in the world and abuse you for the next 6 months, and then for your sake, I'm going to leave. Straighten your ass out. And die to self and move forward one spiritual inch at a time. If you didn't get anything out of this, you're too stupid to teach. I haven't seen many phones ring, so this must be a very interesting festival. I can go on for another 12 hours, 24 hours, however long you want. I hang on every day, and my wife is now learning the same thing. One of these days, as God gave me her, one person will step up and say, eternity means more to me than time. And I'm going to give my life and take whatever it takes and trust the pastor as a representative of God. And if he thinks I'm wrong and I think I'm right, then I'm wrong. Give me one more, and then one more. And then this church will be in good hands. And the 300... or I start. I get on the telephone. One other thing in my philosophy of employees. I don't ever compare people horizontally. I'm not interested that this person is more capable of doing a job than you. It doesn't matter to me. Jesus said not many great and not many noble will call. I know why. They're possessed by their possessions and possessed by their ego. I never compare people horizontally. I am in the business, God's business. I'm only interested in you vertically becoming the best that you can be for God and making a little progress every day that way. Why do you think I learn another language every year? Well, I can use it or not. Like the Sanskrit because of it, which I'm in now because of the roots that help me with other biblical words. To my dying breath, I want to develop anything in me that can make me more useful to God in what He's called me to do. I'm only interested when you come here and seeing you not sit down and think that you are arrived. you. There will never be another you. I don't care if people love you've heard me say these things until you tune off because it sounds like an echo. Some preachers say if you don't do it, God's got somebody else. No, he doesn't. There will never be the unique combination that is you. And when you come into the body of Christ and you find the man you can follow that will lead you as he follows Christ, you have a contribution to make under his direction. No one else can make. Only Christ could die on the cross for mankind. I'm interested in you becoming the best you can be. That's all. That's it. And I think I heard my wife say, that's true. That's all that I'm after. You're not judged by the man that held the post before you got there. And you're not judged by your ability, you're judged by your attitude. The ability can develop. And I got some good news. Right now, every part of this program, we're live around the world. Everything that's being done, from the camera people to the VTR to the character generator to the sound to the music to everything, all volunteers. You're not a staff member. All volunteers. Now, at Secret One, it's all volunteers except those two pains in the ass. Those two thorns in the flesh that still hold on to their knowledge. Could they change and could I give them another chance? Sure. Sure. That's the pain of discernment. You can't fake repentance with me. Well, I'll forgive 1,000 times, but I got to see some progress. I ain't seeing any with these two. Now, we've been live here for 2 hours and 3 minutes, and I've been talking throughout most of the time. We need about 75 more reservations for Sunday. And there's only 2 more days until Sunday. I don't know why. That's why I'm building a church within a church. 300 volunteers giving 12 hours a week. We still don't have 300 in this area, but we opened it to those that were across the nation that are transcribing and doing other things in their areas, volunteers. That's going to be the backbone of rebuilding. And we can see the results with the number of voices of faith that are here. And earlier I said, if you are one of the 300 and came to work, go out in the hall and let us start training you in other things. And they did. That's why we are all volunteer tonight. Everything is being run by volunteers. It's been a long time. I remember when I first determined to train people until I could at least have all volunteers as cameramen. This is a breakthrough, folks. We're doing a live festival, and every person doing anything is a volunteer. You've already applauded. These are the last days, and we're seeing it come. And Peter prophesied, men will be lovers of self rather than God. I'm still looking for the uncommon man or woman. We're not an ordinary church. It really does care more about laying up treasures in heaven. I do not expect to step up alone. I expect to stand right alongside the handing out of rewards to Paul and join with him in that which is accomplished in carrying his message to the world. More people are hearing, not through the centuries, because the sun never goes down without somebody preaching on a passage from a letter that Paul wrote. But his message in this generation, for any one single generation, Paul's true message is being presented and reaching more people every day on this globe, the message that Christ came, His purposes, as I taught in Psalm 21, His purposes and His wishes are being proclaimed without the other silly adornments and foolishness and perversions to more people on any 24-hour period than happened in Paul's lifetime. I absolutely know that Paul could change places with me right now because of his passion for eternal rewards and his knowledge that they're still accruing. He'd change places with me. He never had the chance that we have in these last days to take his message. And wherever I stand for rewards, those that understand anything about what we're here for and what the church is will stand right at my side. And as David said, those that tend the stuff get the same reward as those out on the battlefield. I can't do this by myself. But we need a core of people that are doing it for God and dying to self. And why some of you will still put off making your reservations until it's convenient for you is beyond me. The inn at the cathedral to you folks in Los Angeles is a stewardship. It's an opportunity. Even those that are volunteering 12 hours, the tithe of your time is 16.7 or 8. That other 4 hours plus is to get you to the cathedral. Now, I need more reservations tonight, and we need more people getting involved with Secret 16. So get on the telephone. Now, look. I could keep talking until 10 o'clock when we join the 56th hour and we play a service from Sunday, not last Sunday. I happened by accident to... My wife was looking at an edit that had been done and was chosen to play last night on 56. And I, by accident, was doing something else but tuned in. Every single member of this congregation should have heard last night's message, and you ought to hear it 100 times. That message is coming up in an hour, or in 33 minutes to be exact. How do I get you spiritually tuned in, you that are watching and are dedicated participants in this ministry? You can keep faith in this line and influence the ability of the 10 o'clock hour when we go on 56 to have an impact that the Holy Spirit can accomplish. But God waits to do lots of things for an asking voice. These are not prayer lines for you to call in and expect a voice of faith to pray for you. They deliver the message to me. But there sure isn't any reason you can't call and say, I'm joining you in prayer, that some of the teaching tonight will take hold of people that have been listening for 20 years. Every great revival movement has come about with people who simply leave the world and put God first. George Mueller started his orphanages because he found people that just didn't believe the resurrected power of God today. They wanted to make a commitment, but they couldn't afford it, or they wouldn't be able to do this or that. And now is the time when God speaks to you. And whether you become one of the 300 and come and offer your life here, you got a chance now for 30 minutes to get off your butt and work for God on these phones. You could do worse than call until you reach every voice of faith here and say, I'm doing what Pastor said. I'm calling to say what he said. We appreciate the fact that volunteers are now carrying the load tonight. And there's about 8 people down at the cathedral, and I got a call and said all of them are volunteers except one doing the security down there. Express some appreciation. Thank these voices of faith. Pray that God will anoint his word at 10 o'clock until some lives will be grabbed and this reservation problem will be brought to an end. I got an apology from somebody who said, I just forgot. What would happen to you on your job if you forgot to go to work? No, I didn't just forgot. I sinned against God. By letting other things crowd him out of my mind and my responsibilities to him and my pastor. This is where I'm the hardest to work for. I see through these self... Nobody wants to face the fact of what you are. That's just an excuse. You didn't forget. I forgot to go to work. Try that on your boss. Next year, about July, call the IRS and say I forgot to pay taxes. Well, why am I being billed for a week at this motel? I just forgot to leave after the first day. Give me this crap. I appreciate the spirit of you apologizing. But just apologize right. I'm just a low-down rat that didn't put first things first. I'm one of those problems that the pastor's talking about. That's obvious. The cathedral's not the most important hour of the week to you. You don't forget the most important things in your life. You forget the incidental things. Now, you want to try another apology? Want to make sense? I got a problem. God's got a problem with me. Why didn't Jesus just forget to go to the cross? Just sit down, take off for a night and go up to heaven and visit with the Father. I haven't been up here with you for the last 3.5 years. They both get into it and forgot that the time had come. I can't. Why aren't you crucified on Passover? That's, 23,000 years in the procession of the equinoxes. This is the day. Oh, it's Friday and Saturday and Sunday. Wrong week. I forgot last Wednesday to be crucified. Get off of it. Well, if you don't appreciate my apology, I won't come anymore. I hope you don't if you got that attitude. It's a paradoxical bag here. I don't want you in the church if you haven't got a right attitude. Aren't you trying to reach sinners? I am, all day long, everywhere, 24 hours a day. Like somebody, I didn't make it to the cathedral because I was out witnessing. You really think that you can witness to as many people as you can be a part of being in the cathedral? You can't witness to as many people as we reach on Sunday the rest of your life, plus the fact your witness is going to be a 2-bit witness compared to the one that's going out over the air. You got a chance to be and get the credit for an equal reward of a much better witness than you can go out knocking on the door and say, or in the parking lot, have you been born again? A witness is a martyr. You keep your appointments, and you get yourself to the cathedral. That's the way you have a part in the witness that's going around the world. Well, I'm going to do it my way. I don't care if I only get credit in heaven for winning one soul. Angels will be happy over that. I'd rather do that, get that credit, than be a part of winning tens of thousands around the world whose lives are changed daily. More traditions. Stupid Dwight L. Moody. perpetrated that thing. You got to go out every day before you go to bed. You got to find some poor soul and try to lasso him for Jesus. More people have been driven away from God with that idiocy than have ever been saved. I mean, you know, go to the flea market at the Rose Bowl and sell comic books instead of selling a real work of art. I'm in a good mood tonight, whether you know it or not. You could get me in a bad mood if you don't get on the telephone. Now, get busy. Here's a message. I'd like to start tithing to Dr. Scott. How do I go about that? Well, you write a check. Check or a money order. I've been listening to Dr. Scott about a month, and I need an address. Well, it's really tough. Put it on the screen. P.O. Box 1. P.O. Box 1. He's listening to 56. I didn't know we were on at 9:12 p.m. Anyway, P.O. Box 1, Los Angeles, California, 90053. We're number one. I need an address and do a mixed check to Dr. Scott. Yes, I'm the teacher. That simple. It will be deposited to one or the two churches, I'm sure. I don't think anybody's ever had a check written to me yet that went into a Gene Scott personal account. But I reserve the right to do that. I have reserved the right, since I'm the teacher, and making you do it Galatians 6 way. Been taught in the Word, you share with the one that taught you. That's the way you're testifying to the value of the teaching and the gift domata. Then it's my choice and my joy to have those checks go in the church. In fact, I don't even see them. Somebody else opens the mail and counts them and stamps them. Westcott Christian Center account or Faith Center account, one or the other. I've been listening to Dr. Scott about a month. Need an address and to make a check to Dr. Scott. I answered that. That's pretty simple, isn't it? The calls from San Francisco and Nashville and Washington, D.C. are unbelievable. San Francisco, listen to this. He's very compelling. This is what... I don't take any credit for this. I've said... I did a Ph.D. at Stanford. I changed majors on every degree. I didn't learn what I teach at Stanford. And I study the languages, but God's got to put it together. It's God's gift. That's what the domata is. God gave some apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastoring teachers. He's very compelling in his teaching. There's something about him I'm captivated. Even though I'm not a Christian, his faith resonates through the screen. I'm going to go out and buy a Bible. I hope God will help me to understand the Bible. I'll help you if you keep listening. I really like the fact that Dr. Scott doesn't treat his audience as idiots, but intelligent. Thank you, Dr. Scott. You're welcome. Thank you very much. Look. Santa Rosa. I love that he teaches from the Greek and Hebrew that the Bible was written in. When he explains it, it really makes sense. I'm not a church-going person because it seems that the church has gone off in a direction far from where it's supposed to be. Boy, this is a smart one, isn't it? I love the way he delivers the message. Listen to Washington, D.C., our capital. Listen to some of these messages. This is what God keeps book. I'm going to say again, why do you think the last act of time before God creates everything new, we won't be at the white throne judgment. That's where people are judged by their works. That's where all your defenses will really fall short before that one on the throne. Judged by your works, all fail. And cast into the lake of fire prepared for the devil and his angels. We're not there. We escaped that. Jesus took the penalty for our sins. The judgment seat of Christ is where he judges those that make it in. It's the last act of time because rewards accrue clear up to the last minute. I'm not giving you anything new out of Scripture. I'm, as I've said a thousand times, recognizing what F.B. Meyer said. We don't need anything new. We need to rediscover the old ones that have been covered up with traditions that make void the Word of God. And God enlightens His gift, domitas, to uncover the Word. You can tell when somebody's a God-given teacher. They'll take a passage that you've read maybe dozens of times and suddenly unfold it. And when it's done, you'll say, well, that's it, and that's obvious. It's like turning lights on. That comes from God. And here, listen to these people that in Washington, 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning, whatever time it is there. This call came in at 3:59 a.m. our time, so I guess that's almost 7 o'clock, so it's 6 in the morning in Washington. This isn't gives me the name. I've enjoyed the message very much. I'm in the hospital today as a patient. I wasn't able to go to church today, but was able to listen to this wonderful teaching on Channel 5. I would like to know if there's a website or somewhere where I can get tapes of the teaching. And the voice of faith told her, and she was delighted. And listen, it's like I have inbuilt people all around the nation that test me, believe me. They test me on the language. Alexandria, Virginia. I just tuned in about 5 minutes ago and saw the Ethiopian on the board. Can you give me his website? I want to find more about this. Washington, D.C. I'm from Ethiopia, so I enjoyed it so much. Gives me his name, Dr. such and such. Called to ask for a pulpit and a tape and book list. Silver Springs, Maryland. I was just watching and love how you open up your heart in the languages. I speak Ethiopian and can't tell you how much I enjoyed this. Please send me a copy of the pulpit. You know, we reach the world, folks. Not everybody speaks Los Angeles. First time caller, Riverdale, Maryland. I've been watching for 2 weeks. It breaks everything down so you can understand it. He simplified it. Please stay on the air. I just called to congratulate you. Thank you so much. Please send me the Truth Magazine. And listen, from Nashville, calls pour in as we've gone every morning. Thank you, Dr. Scott from Westmoreland, Tennessee, listening on Nashville every morning, 6 a.m. to 7. Thank you, Dr. Scott. There's no English words to express the thanks. Your sacrifice is so great. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. I'm a 64-year-old grandma, and you mean so much. I hope you live 120 years, and I wish I could watch 24 hours a day. The faith is there, and I'm going to hang my body on it. I'd long to be there in the cathedral. That's what you're going to hang your body on. I want my grandkids to go and receive truths and life. I'll try to get all my double portion in this month. All I have is yours. I love you and truly appreciate all the teaching. Isn't that wonderful? Yeah. I'm sorry for making my reservation so late. I just plain forgot. I think I've wrung that one dry. Get on the phone. Fredericksburg, Virginia. Channel 5, Washington, D.C. My husband set our clock a half hour early to watch Dr. Scott. We've learned so much and really enjoy the teaching. To that person that has forgetfulness, put little, what do you call those triptych things, those little yellow stickers that you can stick on refrigerators? Probably that's where it ought to be put. Put one of those on your refrigerator door. Before I eat after Sunday, I make my reservation. And put one on your steering wheel in your car. And then, put one on the toilet seat. You know, if you need little help in remembering, put one on your pillow in bed. Put one on your pajamas Put one on your wife's tummy. You know, there's ways to avoid forgetting if you really are serious. Go on telephone. I don't miss your prayer requests. I've gotten some serious ones tonight, and I'm praying for you, particularly the family that's facing a biopsy and a pronouncement of lung cancer. I've been where you've been. I know the results of a biopsy. And doctors telling you how short a time you have to live. But that cancer was laid on him, carried away. If God can help you, and you need to do what the man in the New Testament did. He felt he didn't have enough faith. He said, God, help my lack of faith. He didn't say, help my unbelief. He said, help my apesis. I need more. There's a gift of faith as well as the faith that we initiate. I don't miss your prayer requests. I'm here from Springfield, Missouri. Calling from the federal prison here. Love you, Dr. Scott. My prison number is, and he gives it to me. We're listening here. Hang in there, brother. You hang into the faith that you have, too. You hang in. Paul spent a lot of time in prison. But when he was in prison, he was free. He was in Christ. Wouldn't it be something if an earthquake shook that prison open tonight? Get on the phone!